The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the talk station, its management, or ownership.
All I know is that first, you've got to get mad.
This is the Rage.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
What is truth and what they want you to believe
may not be the same thing.
Is it Lumia, a transmission?
If you're not mad yet, you should be. It's time to get your rage on.
On this most auspicious of nights, permit me then, in lieu of the more commonplace sobriquet, to suggest the character of this dramatis persona.
And now, The Rage, with your host, Catch
22.
Welcome to The Rage, everybody. On this Saturday night, on the talk station, FM 107 AM 1240, your live voice in the darkness. There is no place at this hour on a Saturday night that you can tell your story over the air, streaming over the web. We are on Facebook. We are on our own little chat rooms. We have everything going so that you can interact with this. But tonight it's going to be a little bit different. The interaction is going to be laid off a little bit because we got into the interaction last week, and it just got kind of nuts, and we really got off track because what we're going to talk about may be, well, no, it is. It is the fundamental key to debunking what you see before your eyes, what you hear with your ears, so that we can see through this smoke and mirrors and get through this labyrinth and get back to where we need to be, because we are definitely off track. But you have to understand the information that you're being fed to perceive the world that you live in and how to apply it. So you're going to have to put on your thinking caps tonight to get through this, your critical thinking caps. And we do want to get to where we all critical think everything we hear every day. It's absolutely important. Joining us at the round table tonight, just like last week, we're going to have Aaron and Jesse so that we can go through this. Our special guest tonight is Jan Irvin, and on the board and handling all of the network stuff on the web is Nick Benjamin, and he'll be screening your calls when we open up the phone lines later, and we will. And what we want to do is we want to study this key so that we can understand freedom, or at least the awareness of freedom. We have to understand how to interact with this world as we perceive it, and as we know, perceptions can go all over the place. And the way we get manipulated is through a series of what's called like logical fallacies. And one of those is the argument from authority. And that is where you take authority as the truth rather than the truth as the authority. And we see a lot of that today. The word comes down from the top and we just follow it like a bunch of sheeple. But believe me, we are being fed genetically modified BS, are we not? Here at the round table, allow me to introduce, welcome, Aaron, with his special guest, Jan Irvin.
How's it going, everybody?
And he will be primarily going through, he has had hours on the phone with Jan, so that we can get across all of these points and these logical fallacies using the trivium and the quadrivium. Now, it sounds very complicated, but you know what? It's not. Salesmen use it on you every day. Every day that you want to sell something, the basis for all of this comes from all of the steps of logical fallacies. They use them on you, and the ancient science of figuring this out is the trivium. And also joining us, Jess.
Welcome. Hey there. How you doing?
On this rainy night, I'm doing pretty good. I'm actually looking very forward to getting the reactions from everybody as we learn this first very, very vital step in critical thinking.
It's bound to be interesting, that's for sure.
It really does. As we're sitting here around the studio, for a lot of you people that listen to the talk station on a regular basis, I see some books laying around that you don't normally see, and one of them laying right here says Nullification, How to Resist Federal Tyranny in the 21st Century. That's an interesting piece of literature to be in a radio station with Rush Limbaugh and Laura Ingraham and Sean Hannity. as co what would you call co talkers. Logical fallacies, the trivium. Aaron, why don't you give us a little background? How old is this trivium?
This trivium in the liberal arts, they go back. They're actually a part of our human history. Aristotle was actually the first one credited with putting the trivium together. But before him was Plato and Socrates. And Socrates even made mentions about how ancient this method of critical thinking is. And, you know, one thing that I would like to stress tonight is, you know, this is something, this is definitely a silver bullet against the tyranny that we're being brought up against right now. And, you know, it's been mentioned throughout the past that, you know, without understanding the art of rhetoric, which is actually argumentation, if you don't have these classical education behind you, you're basically rendered defenseless against any kind of mass scale advertising and propaganda. And that was actually mentioned by Dorothy Sayers, who at Oxford University in 1947, in a very famous essay that she wrote addressing these issues.
The only thing that I want people to come away with is understanding that we've talked a lot about a lot of these concepts, but we've called them different things. The logical fallacies, we call it the word war.
This is almost like trying to explain to somebody how vital understanding the money system works to somebody that's never even heard about the money system or the Federal Reserve, or understands fiat money, usury fees, and fractional reserve banking. But tonight, you know, we are going to do our best to break this down, and please spread the information everywhere, because, like I said, this is the silver bullet that'll, you know, take down the corporate tyranny that we're experiencing right now.
And while you're listening and you're thinking and applying these things, think about the word war, and think about how words in your everyday life are transforming, and they don't seem to mean what they used to mean. Well, there's one word that I want you all to concentrate on and apply all of this that we talk about tonight, and what would that be? That would be the word treason and the word traitor. Understand treason and traitor and liar and doublespeak. And we're going to find about all this stuff and bring Jan Erwin on air from GnosticMedia.com. Jump on there if you can. There's tons of websites. And this education needs to be continued. And we'll talk about more, because you are listening to The Rage on FM 107 AM 1240, your live voice in the darkness. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rage on FM 107 AM 1240, your live voice in the darkness in eastern North Carolina. And we are also streaming on the web. The phone lines will be shut down for a little while, but you can still communicate with us all the other ways, and we will get the questions to Jan, our special guest tonight. Nick, would you kindly give the vital statistics?
Absolutely. Be sure to check out our Facebook group. Search for The Rage Radio. You can post to our Twitter. Check us out at Rant on Rage, or you can join us in the chats at tinychat.com/rageradio. Also, check out our website, k22.yolasite.com, for a direct link to Mr. Irvin's best works and also some of our own special information.
Thank you very much. And now, to bring Jan on, I'm going to turn it over to Aaron, who put all this all together. And we're, like I said, oh, Carl, you're out there. Glad you're listening. Let's put us on track and turn it over to Aaron to introduce our guest.
Hey, thanks, Ketch. And I definitely want to say thanks for, giving us the opportunity to present this information again, and really this time go over it thoroughly because, like I said before, and for those that are just tuning in, you know, this will probably be the most important broadcast to leave this radio station. The information that we're about to present to you can and will save our country if we can get this information out. And that information is on critical thinking. And, you know, and I want to stress on, you know, why has nobody ever heard of the Trivium method of critical thinking? You know, that's a good question to ask, and there's no information on it, and this is a method of critical thought that's been around for centuries, millennia even. And without taking up any more of his time, I want to welcome onto the show Jan Irvin. Welcome back, brother.
Thank you for having me on.
No problem, man.
It is good talking to you again.
Hey there, Jan.
And hi, good to hear all of you again, and thank you so much for having me back. It's been a whole week.
A whole week.
And a busy week it's been.
tell us, get us started on critical thinking. You got anything special to ask, start off?
No, go ahead, wherever you want to off from.
Before the show, Aaron had actually mentioned that he was interested in mentioning or reading a little bit from Dorothy Sayers. Did you want to go ahead and do that? And, you know, I'll mention a little bit about Dorothy Sayers. She graduated from Oxford University in 1920, Masters of Arts. She was a renowned English crime writer, poet, playwright, et cetera. And in 1947... she presented a lecture called The Lost Tools of Learning to Oxford University. And would you like to kick off with some of what that's about, Aaron?
Yeah, sure. And this quote here that Miss Sayers wrote about, it was about how modern school prolongs childhood and stunts intellectual growth. And in the article here it says, she writes, quote, "When we think about the remarkable early age at which the young men went up to university and, let us say, Tudor times, and thereafter were held fit to assume responsibility for the conduct of their own affairs, are we altogether comfortable about that artificial prolongation of intellectual childhood and adolescence into the years of physical maturity, which is so marked in our own today?" And this was written back in 47, and look at how immature our society acts at such a late age. And Jan, you want to comment on that?
Well, you know, that's very true. And basically what's happening is they're intentionally dumbing us down, dumbing the entire society down so that we don't think critically, so that they can bombard us with advertisements and political campaigns and all sorts of false rhetoric that they use in order to literally run the society. And when I say run the society, I mean the elites and the people in power use our ignorance or lack of these things to perform these operations against us. The elites, the people that go to the IB schools, they're generally taught the Trivium method and what we're going to be speaking about tonight. And so if you want to know what these people, what kind of education these people are getting when they pay all this money to send their kids to these private schools, you're about to find out. And so as Aaron already mentioned, the Trivium, as far as we know, goes back before Socrates. We can trace it back, written evidence-wise, to evidence suggests to the Phoenicians, and it probably even goes back to ancient India from there. It looks like India is the forerunner of all of the present knowledge that we're currently dealing with. So why don't you continue on with the next little bit from Dorothy Sayers, Aaron?
Yeah, and in this next part that she wrote about, she was talking about how susceptible we are to advertisement and mass propaganda, like I was mentioning earlier. And she says, quote, "Has it ever struck you as odd or unfortunate that today, when the proportion of literacy throughout Western Europe is higher than it has ever been, people should have become susceptible to the influence of advertisement and mass propaganda to an extent hitherto unheard of and unimagined. Do you put this down as the mere mechanical fact that the press and the radio and so on have made propaganda much easier to distribute over a wide area, or do you sometimes have an uneasy suspicion that the product of modern educational method is less good than he or she might be at disentangling fact from opinion and proven from the plausible?
And that just goes right back to talking about the media and the marketing, the PR companies and everything, and that's exactly what we're dealing with. The world has learned how to read, and we have more literate people probably on the planet today per capita population than ever before, but the large majority of those people can no longer think. And so that's a big difference. What we've done is we've created a society of people that can work in factories and operate the machines and read an operating manual and punch the clock on the way out and turn on the TV to watch the football game. But when it comes to the extent of critical thinking, while most people will argue that they have critical thinking, if in fact in ancient times, if you were unaware of the Trivium Method and what we're talking about, they didn't consider that you were capable of critical thought. And in fact, philosophy, the foundations of philosophy are based in the Trivium Method. Because in order to first, and we'll talk about this more as we go, but in order to begin to understand something, you have to know what you're trying to understand. And so the first rule of the Trivium Method is looking at the grammar, and if you're not looking at the letters and the punctuation marks and things like that as in physical writing, then on the next level up from that, what you're dealing with is physical objects out in reality. You know, what are you dealing with? What is the information that you have in front of you? And so logic is really the law of identification without contradiction going on from grammar. And logic, once we have the knowledge of the items that we're dealing with, then we go on to understanding what we're dealing with a strict law of identification without contradicting. So now we're understanding what we know, and then from there we take it to the next level, which we could consider wisdom, which falls under rhetoric, which is how we explain it or present it to other people. But I don't want to jump too far ahead, but that's really the rundown. And I might as well just read this next Dorothy Sayers quote. "Is not the great defect of our education today a defect traceable through all the disquieting symptoms of trouble that I have mentioned? That although we have succeeded in teaching our pupils, quote-unquote, subjects, we fail lamentably on the whole in teaching them how to think. They learn everything except the art of learning." And what the Trivium is exactly is it's learning how to learn. It's learning that when you look at a bunch of different things, you have to logically map out what you know, what you're trying to understand, and what you're trying to convey. And this is grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And it's just different macro and microcosms of presenting this same type of information. And so, you know, that really gets to the core of what the Trivium Method is. And one thing with not learning how to learn is that you're always reliant upon somebody else to teach you things. So let's say if you go to, let's say if you have the Trivium and Quadrivium and you're studying music, and you go to a music instructor, and the music instructor teaches you a song, and you leave the music, without the Trivium and the Quadrivium, excuse me, and you leave the music instructor's house, and you go home and you can play that one song. But the next time that you want to play another song, basically, in essence, what they're doing is they've made it so that you have to go back to the music instructor again and pay him again to teach you another song. So, in essence, what the trivium and the quadrivium are doing is it's teaching you how to learn what music is about, how all the notes are laid out, et cetera, how to read music, all of this, so that you don't any longer rely upon somebody else for your learning. You then have the tools of knowing how to learn and how to study really any new subject as an expert, really. And the trivium allows you to cut right through the garbage, not being, like Dorothy Sayers mentioned, not being bought out by the propaganda and advertisers. And it allows you to cut right through all that and get right to the core of the issues.
We have a short break coming up. Excuse the interruption. We do have to do these commercial interludes. Please pay attention. Patronize those people if you feel it necessary. And pay close attention. Apply the trivium. We'll be back in just a moment on The Rage, FM 107 AM 1240.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the talk station, its management, or ownership.
This is The Rage.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things.
The Rage.
Welcome back to The Rage, FM 107 AM 1240. Man, that was a long one. Got down to the end. Yes, and things are bad. They are really bad. But we're going to learn tonight how we can make them better. Oh, and as a side note, if you all were, any of you were outside today and you happened to look up at this beautiful day that was provided for us, did you happen to notice how it got rather cloudy at the end? Did you happen to notice that you got chemtrailed all day long? They pounded you. Take a deep breath. Don't you feel better? Well, let's get back to some critical thinking. Aaron, take it back.
All right. Thanks a lot, Catch. And
you know, let me interrupt Aaron for a second on that chemtrail bit. You know, recently they were chemtrailing me. Well, it was a couple of months ago. And what I did was I went outside with my cell phone and I called the sheriff's department and I radioed it in. And what was interesting is the first thing they said was, well, they haven't notified us that they're spraying anything today. And then they asked for identification to the airplanes. And then what was really odd is suddenly she pulled up a list that she had almost like ready at hand to start asking me any medical complications I was having. I thought that was very interesting. But go ahead, Aaron. Sorry to interrupt you.
Wow.
Well, before we get off of that, let me just put that people look up at the sky. My God, folks, what do you got? What kind of a hammer do you have to get hit with? Those are not contrails. And even if they were, if that has anything to do with a poisonous, toxic fume from a jet engine.
All you have to do is watch them for 10 or 20 minutes, and you'll see them actually turning and going back and forth over the same parts of the sky repeatedly. And any plane that's going to someplace doesn't sit there and turn around and go back and forth 10 times in one area. So, you know, I used to kind of be in doubt of it, and then one day I walked outside and went, oh, wow, and I took my camera outside, and I took about 50 or 60 photographs. There were even other airliners that were flying into LAX that you could see that were not leaving anything at the same elevations as the airplanes that were spraying. And that was the same case when I called the sheriff's department, is when the sheriffs were asking me about the airplanes, I was telling them, well, I can see a commercial airliner from this company flying over right now, leaving nothing, and you know, directly over that way to the west from that airplane is another one that's going back and forth, leaving trails all over the sky. And the dispatcher actually said that they did in fact send two patrol cars out to photograph and film the spraying.
Well, I don't want to get off like we did last week, but suffice it to say, everybody, go to YouTube, punch in chemtrail and get educated on it. Find the difference between a contrail and a chemtrail, and it wouldn't make any difference either way, folks. With as many of them as you see up there, let's say it isn't sinister and it isn't chemtrails, whatever it is, there's entirely too much of it up there. And you and your children and your family are breathing it. Let's get back to critical thinking, and then that'll take care of the chemtrail problem.
All right. Thanks a lot, Catch. And, no, man, that's some pretty vital stuff to bring up. I know I kind of did the same thing as you, Jan. Walked out in the front yard, and I went, wow, that's a lot of stuff up in the sky. But hopefully getting into the trivium, we can start learning how to break down all the mass-scale propaganda that's being thrown at us and all the mass-scale advertisement that's being thrown at us, and we can reclaim our armor, like Dorothy Sayers was trying to say back in 1947. And just to reiterate who Dorothy Sayers was, is she was a graduate from Oxford, and she graduated with a master's degree. She was a very renowned writer, and she laid down everything that was wrong with the education system back in 1947. And the thing is it hasn't changed since 1947. In fact, it has gotten far worse. And this is something we can do to solve the problem and guard ourselves against what's going on. And Jan, where would you like to pick up from?
Well, why don't we continue with reading some of this Dorothy Sayers stuff. Why don't you continue with the next quote?
All right, cool. And then in the next quote, and you got anybody that's out there that's interested, you can just type in the Lost Tools of Learning. That's the essay that we're going over right now, and it's very important to get this message out. And anybody that's listening on the web, spread this information, please. It's very vital. But,
we'll also be discussing a lot of the things that are up on the 534trivium.com website, and the Dorothy Sayers essay is there for PDF download under the bibliography.
Excellent.
And, give that website one more time.
534trivium.com, or actually trivium.anything, .net.org, it'll all get you there.
Great, and I'll continue on with the quote. When Miss Sayers describes the trivium, she says, quote, grammar, dialectic, and rhetoric in that order. Now, the first thing we notice is that two at any rate of these subjects are not what we would call subjects at all. They're only methods of dealing with subjects. Grammar, indeed, is a subject in the sense that it does mean definitely learning a language. At that period, it meant learning Latin. But language itself is simply the medium in which thought is expressed. The whole of the trivium was in fact intended to teach the pupil the proper use of the tools of learning before he began to apply them to subjects at all. First, he learned language, not just how to order a meal in a foreign language, but the structure of a language, and hence of language itself. What it was, how it was to put together, and how it worked. Secondly, he learned how to use language, how to define his terms and to make accurate statements, how to construct an argument, and how to deal with fallacies in argument. Dialectic, that is to say, embraced logic and disputation. Thirdly, he learned to express himself in language, how to say what he had to say elegantly and persuasively. And Jan, what's your comments on that, brother?
Well, that is just... it's mental armoring. What we're doing when we learn these things is, and being able to construct an argument with eloquence and make accurate statements, that is mental armament. That is preparing ourselves literally for life. And, you know, the sad thing is that these are tools that we all should have been taught beginning in junior high school. And it goes up from there. After the trivium, there are other things available, but it's intellectual self-defense. It's like having a mental antivirus, so to speak, so that whenever anybody lies to you, like You know, and I don't want to pick on all of your commercials, but there were some good ones in there during the break. I love listening to commercials just because I like to pick up on the logical fallacies. But one of them was like an appeal to emotion, and it was a shampoo commercial, and then they quoted deep penetrating action, and you know,
no innuendo there.
And then directly right after that, they had a hair loss commercial, okay? So these two were actually very probably timed together. And then what they did is after that, and if you follow all of these things too, what they did after that is there was a commercial called To Learn, You Listen, and it was Get the Verbal Advantage. And I thought it was very interesting that they put this show on, and it was about corporate people taking advantage verbally is basically what I got out of the commercial, the verbal advantage, so that in business you could get an advantage over others. But I thought that was very interesting that they would play that during an episode of your show where you're talking about the Trivium Method. And it seemed rather ironic, if not intentional, if you guys had advertised ahead of time that this was going to be on. If not, it's pure coincidence, but an interesting one nonetheless.
Now, this used to be part of the educational system. When did it drop out?
It started, well, it's gone in and out several times throughout history, but the current time that it's gone out was at around the middle of the 1800s, around 1850. In fact, there's a very good book on the Trivium by a doctor, Randall Hart, that if I can remember the title of it, just a second here, I'll tell you that. It's
Increasing Academic Achievement, I believe, is what you're looking for.
Yeah, Increasing Academic Achievement with the Trivium of Classical Education. And, you know, so this is a book that actually goes into the history and the details of when all of this was removed from our educational background.
Yes, sir, and I got that book with me in the studio right now.
We'll be right back. This is The Rage on FM 107 AM 1240. Welcome back to The Rage, FM 107 AM 1240. And that was an amazing little trip down a rabbit hole, sitting there listening to all of those commercials. Like I said, a lot of these things are sales techniques, but in that little commercial break, they did 25 of my favorite 20 logical fallacies. They actually surpassed. That was very funny, Jan. Just sat there and listened. They just ran the whole gambit, all of it. they did. They used just about all of them. Study this stuff.
That's
amazing.
It's not a question of if advertisement is using logical fallacies against you. It's a question of which ones are they using against you, because they have to use it against you in order for you to get their buy their crap. And it's the same thing with politicians.
They use it, and sometimes they use two or three in the same pitch.
I mean,
they've got this. These Madison Avenue people have it polished.
Yeah,
Madison Avenue went over to Wall Street, and the rest is history.
And two very good websites that we should mention to people on logical fallacies. One is Dr. Michael Abosier's website, and it's at www.nizkor.org, NIZKOR.org, and then /features/fallacies/, and that should pull that right up, and there's about 42 of them listed on that page. And you can also find that just by typing in logical fallacies on Google, and it comes up first. And then right below that one that comes up on Google is logicalfallacies.info, and over on the right side they've got a number that aren't listed on the other one. And there's actually probably a couple hundred logical fallacies. It would probably be pretty hard to identify all of them because there's so many. And the sophists have had, almost 3,000 years to create logical fallacies against everyone. So they've had a lot of time to master their art, and the Trivium is the end of the rabbit hole and the exit hole the exit hole with the Trivium. And, you know, once you go through all this junk, you can begin to see what they're doing and navigate your way through all the crud with the Trivium. You know, it's just like you guys were doing, And you're starting to recognize the logical fallacies while you're listening to the commercials, but by reading over those websites, and not just once, but on, you know, get familiar with the stuff there. And then it's actually, it becomes very fun because you can sit there and, you know, it's a lot more fun to listen to a commercial and identify all the logical fallacies that they're trying to use against you than it is to sit there and listen sort of like a zombie and take it in as like something that you need to go out and actually buy, you know. So it gives time and interest to commercials and teaches you, sharpens your skills in identifying the logical fallacies.
I appreciate that suggestion that you made that caused me to do that, because as mundane as all of this gets and so hard to keep, you know, breaking all of the stuff that's happening down, I ignore commercials. I've just grown to the point where I ignore them. But picking them apart is a lot more fun than ignoring them. I also, your time that you said that when the Trivium actually fell out of the school system was just long enough before the war between the states, so that maybe that wasn't a coincidence either, that was in fact all part of it. So we had a good 10 years for people to forget how to think, so that they actually thought the Civil War was over slavery.
Well, it would be specifically those of the youth age, the 18 to 28 or 30 year olds.
You mean the ones who have to die?
Right, exactly. So possibly that could be a very good point that you have there. I had never considered that.
Well, you know, there are no coincidences with those people.
Absolutely.
Very true. Hey, Aaron.
Yes.
Why don't we knock out these last two Dorothy Sayre quotes, because I think she brings a lot to the table that people probably would be interested in, and then we can dive into some more of the goodies from there.
You got about 3 minutes until a hard break at the top of the hour, which is a long break. So maybe hit one of them really hard.
3 minutes since the last one?
Well, we moved the break backwards because you were talking, and of course, when we come up against the hard one.
Yeah, unfortunately, the news can't be negotiated.
All right, let's go. Aaron, go for it. Read it.
All right, quote, "For we let our young men and women go out unarmored in a day when armor was ever so necessary. By teaching them all to read, we have left them at the mercy of the printed word. By the invention of film and radio, we have made certain that no aversion to reading shall secure them from the incessant battery of words, words, words. They do not know what words mean. They do not know how to ward them off or blunt their edge or fling them back. They are prey to the words in their emotions instead of being masters of them in their intellects. We, who were scandalized in the 1940s when men were sent to fight armored tanks with rifles, are not scandalized when young men and women are sent into the world to fight mass propaganda with a smattering of subjects. And when whole classes and whole nations become hypnotized by the arts of the spellbinder, we have the impudence to be astonished. We dole out lip service to the importance of education, lip service and just occasionally a little grant of money. We postpone the school leaving age, and we plan to build bigger and better schools. The teachers slave continuously in and out of school hours, and yet, as I believe, all is devoted effort is largely frustrated because we have lost the tools of learning. In their absence can only make a botched and piecemeal job of it." End
Great
quote.
Stuff.
Yes, it is. That's a powerful, powerful statement there.
And do we have time to do this other one, or is it break time now?
We got 2 minutes. Is there any discussion that
you'd
like to add to that one? Some depth?
Well, you know, I don't know if there's much I can add to that one. I think that
it sums things up so elegantly.
But let's hit this next one. "But I am not here to consider the feelings of academic bodies. I am concerned only with the proper training of the mind to encounter and deal with the formidable mass of undigested problems presented to it by the modern world. For the tools of learning are the same in any and every subject, and the person who knows how to use them will, at any age, get the mastery of a new subject in half the time and with a quarter of the effort expanded by the person who has not the tools or the trivium at his command. To learn six subjects without remembering how they were learnt does nothing to ease the approach to a seventh. To have learnt and remembered the art of learning makes the approach to every subject an open door.
Amen. Amen. And we definitely need that back, and we need to claim that back, and that's why this broadcast is so important. So we can start spreading this information around and getting it out.
Let me give everyone a quote here from Robert M. Mutchins, and he says, "A liberal education frees a man from the prison house of his class, race, time, place, background, family, and even his nation."
Excellent stuff. And I know one word that's definitely fallen on hard times is the word liberal. And this was brought up last week on last week's show. And I got to admit, for a long time I was caught up in, I thought the word liberal meant, anybody do whatever they want, but that's not what it means. It means of or befitting the free.
So, we'll go into that a lot more right after the break.
Yeah, definitely.
You're listening to The Rage on FM 107 AM 1240. This is the talk station. We'll be back. Don't go away.
Is it lunopia, a transmission? Will we soon have tried to push and try to keep us all down and down? Know that we will never see the truth around. Another promise, another scene, another a package left to keep us trapped in. We're all a green bounce wrapped around our minds, an endless red tape to keep the truth confined.
The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the talk station, its management, or ownership.
All I know is that first, you've got to get mad.
This is The Rage.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
What is truth and what they want you to believe
may not be the same thing.
I'm going to pull that on out of there and get back to the meat at hand here. You're listening to The Rage on FM 107 AM 1240. And what we're telling you tonight is information that you have to know. If you don't know this information, the country is going to fall apart and the planet is going to blow up and turn into dust. And I'm
using a field of fear there.
Use a little logical fallacy on you folks, because it can be coming at you from any direction. You got to be watching for it.
Oil rigs blowing up, race riots in D.C., dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria, if you don't know this information.
Let's get back to critical thinking.
The slippery slope fallacy.
There it is.
Well, what I wanted to start off with coming back from the break there is to talk about the very definition of the word liberal. Because a classical education is based on the seven liberal arts. Now, we talked about the word liberal last week, and somebody had commented when I asked what they thought the definition of liberal was basically like, I forget, what did the
That was
the,
me
the woman...
there, Jan. That was yeah. me, and I pretty much was, if it feels good, do it.
Right.
There you go.
And that is the interpretation generally.
Yeah,
generally either that or it's interpreted as communist or some other form, which it's actually not.
And here in Eastern North Carolina, it is an evil word.
Oh, it's absolutely, even out here in California, I'm not far from the Orange Curtain where some of the most conservative area in the country is Orange County. But the word liberal itself, and I actually researched this back a long time ago. I used to work for a newspaper, And I used to hear a lot of customers say that, you know, I wouldn't want that liberal rag. So one day, I sat down to figure out exactly what the word liberal was. And I spent a lot of time researching this, and I've had probably 15 years subsequent to continue to look into this. But if you go all the way back to the earliest dictionaries, like the Webster's 1828 dictionary or the Webster's 1853 dictionary, the word liberal is defined as free, which in a way what she said is correct. But here's the real breakdown. Webster's 1893 dictionary tells us that it means free by birth, hence befitting a free man or gentleman. It also means the liberal arts or studies, a liberal education. And it's also bestowing in a large and noble way as a free man. And it goes on, and I'm going to just skip through some of these definitions here. I'm not going to read every one. But number four is not strict or rigorous, not confined or restricted in the literal sense, free. Number seven is not bound by orthodox tenets or established forms in political or religious philosophy, independent in opinion, not conservative, friendly to great freedom in the constitution or administration of government, having a tendency toward democratic or republican as distinguished from monarchical or aristocratic forms of government, as liberal thinkers, liberal Christianity, the liberal party. Liberal arts, see under art, a liberal education, education that enlarges and disciplines the mind and makes it master of its own powers irrespective of a particular business or the profession one may follow. And then going down, one who favors great freedom in political or religious matters, an opponent of established systems or a reformer. A free man, this is the definition of liberal from 1990, so we're coming forward 97 years here. And it says also, ever befitting a free man, not bound by authoritarianism, orthodoxy, or traditional forms. Constituting a political party in the United Kingdom associated with the ideals of individual and especially economic freedom. So what I want to talk about next is antonyms to the word liberal, which is the words that mean the opposite of the word liberal. And these are actually taken from the dictionaries and from looking at the actual definition of the word liberal and finding the antonyms of that word. So some of the words that come up are uneducated, unintellectual, closed of heart, selfish, narrow, contracted, mean, small, fascist, racist, bigoted, homophobic, stingy, closed-minded, supportive of monarchies and slavery, against freedom of religion, expression, and speech, low in birth and mind, and then, of course, since this is supposed to be a free country, it would be anti-American. So technically, people who are out bashing liberals are bashing freedom. Let me make a point here real quick, because it's very important to understand that somebody had to take the word liberal away from what it really meant, and they spun it on us to mean something that it didn't mean. Because if you consider that the word liberal means in and of itself freedom or ever befitting the free, it's absurd to say that liberals are anti-freedom. And I hear that a lot, you know, the freedom-hating liberals or the communist liberals and stuff like that. These are all things that you hear. But you understand what a true definition of the word liberal is now. And so then you can also understand, well, those things are not liberal, and these attacks are fallacious attacks. But why would someone take the word liberal and change it? And when you understand that it hides the trivium and the quadrivium, the seven liberal arts, what we're talking about here today, then you understand why they changed the word liberal to mean something that everybody thinks is bad, to mean literally the antithesis of what it really is. And
well, Jan, I find it interesting that almost everybody I know that calls themselves liberal is the antonym of the word liberal.
I don't know about out there, but you know, it's I don't really know anybody who even really applies that word, but it can vary. A lot of people who consider themselves democratic are consider themselves liberal or whatever, but I wouldn't say that all Democrats are racist or bigoted, homophobic, and stingy and all of those things. Then you get into other appeal fallacies.
Well, I don't mean that they display all of those, but you know, there's certain ones that they definitely do. And, yeah, I do know a lot of people that are proud to consider themselves liberal.
Right, but make sure that you're not using, like, a genetic fallacy or a too small, you know, a hasty generalization fallacy where you're using really a too small of group of people to judge a whole. And that's a very common fallacy as well. So here's another, if for instance, of what the word liberal comes from, is we have the word liberate, which obviously means to set free, and Libra is the zodiacal sign between Scorpio and Virgo with the balances that is used for justices and the justice and law systems today. Mm-hmm. And then most of us know that the word libro is Latin or Spanish for book. So it's all about education. It's about getting the liberal education, the seven liberal arts, the books, the liber. And so that's what it's about. Yeah.
Welcome back to The Rage, FM 107, AM 1240. What we're doing tonight is we're talking about critical thinking and the foundations of critical thinking found in the ancient method of the trivium. To help you interpret and get through this material realm. And we were talking about the word liberal and how words change meanings over time. And, I was kind of looking at this one right here. What kind of happened to the word liberal? Liberal, there's a couple of false or logical fallacies going on here. They kind of took the word liberal to a-liberal, which is kind of like assigning it the straw man concept. Then they personalize it with a person to degrade it by association. Then they use the old ad hominem and just attack the person. So
that was excellent. And that's exactly the process of using the trivium to understand logical fallacies and realize how people are BSing you. And that's the... See, that's why it's so important is when you hear a word, and this goes back to grammar, the first part of the trivium method, when you hear a word, what is that word specifically? What does it mean? So, you know, we think that we know the definition of the word liberal because we hear it from the media and we hear Rush Limbaugh and all these guys pounding it. And but if we don't actually look in the dictionary and look it up, we buy all of that. So then if you see the real definition of liberal, then you can go through and apply it, and then you can go over and look at all of the logical fallacies, and you can go, this is what they're doing, and this is how they've broken everything down and changed everything on us. So, you know, that's really what the trivium or the classical education is for. And the components of the trivium are general grammar, formal Aristotelian logic, and classical rhetoric. And it's presented to methodically gather raw and factual data into a coherent body so that we can have knowledge of it, and that's grammar. And if you break it down further into a microcosm, you take the individual letters that you have, and you understand those individual letters, and you put them into words, you know, so this is the foundation of building blocks. So there's just different levels of how we apply the trivium. If it's letters, that's, you know, specific grammar, but it macrocosmically, it can go on to words and the objects or things that we're dealing with around us in a conversation, objects and ideas like the word liberal. You know, and another one that I should mention is very important that they have taken and spun is the word trivium itself. And they took the word trivium and they have trivialized it. They have turned it into trivia. And so this was another sophist attack to get people to think that the trivium was just trivial, nonsense, unimportant. Don't look over there, folks, right? So this is one of the tricks that they use. They fooled us with both words, liberal and trivium. And so the only thing that is really left is classical that hasn't been butchered, but in a way it has too, because, you know, it's been pirated by certain religious groups. You know, Christians like to claim that it's a classical Christian education, but actually when we look at the history of it, it comes from the Phoenicians, it comes from Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, and these are all pre-Christian people who developed this stuff. So it doesn't belong to any single religious group or philosophy. It belongs to everyone, and we all need to learn it if we're going to, you know, start critical thinking so that we can solve the problems in this country and take things back as a nation, really. And somebody going to say something?
Yeah, your first premise on grammar, on language in general. Now, to assemble all of that into a knowledge base before
right.
you apply the logic, what is the best source to understand that word? Is it, would you go to etymology on it, or would you consider contemporary context?
You get the best dictionary that you can find. And, you know, typically the best one you would probably want, which is very expensive to have, a Black's Law Dictionary on hand, which is used for all sorts of political false rhetoric and stuff. But Webster's Third New International Dictionary is a very good dictionary to have. It's a very large set. But the best dictionary, the most renowned dictionary in the world, is the Oxford English Dictionary, or the OED. And it consists of about 22 or 24 volumes in its full size, so it'll take up a full bookshelf. But you can get a condensed version of it that's just one volume, but it comes with a rather large magnifying glass that you have to read it with. But, you know, there's a software version of it that you can buy from them. It's rather expensive, but if you can get a hold of a copy of the OED, that's the real dictionary to have, because it gives you the etymology and the origins of the words and as much knowledge as possible that's out there and known to the Oxford University scholars about a word.
What has more relevance, though? What it meant, like when we're analyzing the Constitution, what it meant 200 and plus years ago, or how it is being interpreted now, or is that the stage where you apply the logic?
Well, if we're in an argument about a discussion of something right now in the present, we define it in our present terms. You know, if we're talking about something historically 300 or 400 years ago, then we would want to define it in those terms. And you know, that's the nice thing about the Oxford OED, is that it has the etymology and the history, and you can look it up and you can see the first instance that they know of that the word was used, and you know, all of that type of information is right there so that you can utilize it. But what it does is it gives you the ability to see all of the different possibilities of how that one word is defined. And then you go back and you read the sentence or whatever you're breaking down using the trivium, and you go, aha, well, if I define it this way, it means something completely different than if I define it that way. So then you can go through it, and you can see all the different possibilities that somebody may have manipulated a word on you. You know, English is renowned for having many different words that are exactly the same, like which and which, you know, W-I-T-C-H or W-H, I-C-H. So, you know, these are the types of things that we have to understand, and that's why it's important to, first off, understand the specific words. And so when you're debating somebody, you always say, well, let's define the specific meaning of this word. And if somebody tries to switch the meaning of that word during a conversation or a debate, that is actually a logical fallacy, and you can just call them out on it. Hey, you know, go back. We already defined this word to mean specifically this definition. During this conversation, we are adhering to that specific definition so that there is no, you know, messing around and playing games on anything. And that's part of learning the tricks of language and the trivium, logic, grammar, rhetoric, so that you can identify all of the different things. And going back to knowledge, like Catch just said, when you have the words, get the knowledge first of what the words mean. Get a dictionary, define the words, figure out exactly what the person is trying to say, And then you go, aha, well, now I understand exactly what's possible here. Now, is this a logical statement? If it is, okay, you accept it. That's fine. If it's illogical, you look at the logical fallacies, you categorize it, and you understand it for what it is, and you neutralize it.
On the subject of fallacies, I would like to point out that according to one of the definitions of liberal that we have here on our little cheat sheet, it mentions that a liberal is not bound by any established political ideology or philosophy. Could you expound a little bit on how that relates to being a constitutionalist, considering that it's over 200 years old?
A constitutionalist. Well, you know, I don't want to get into the definition that a dictionary presents, but those are all of the different possibilities. A constitutionalist versus somebody who's for monarchies, or what was the other thing you said?
Well, I mean, no other thing, really. I mean, it's just, can anyone really call themselves a liberal while adhering to the tenets of the Constitution because of its age? Isn't it sort of a unfortunately dated document, isn't it?
Well, yes and no, but see, if a constitution is used to uphold the tenets of freedom, and it doesn't matter the age, and that's another type of fallacy as well, you know, appeal to tradition, or, you know, there's the appeal to something new fallacy. Oh, look, it's the newest, latest model, we have to get that. And just because something is newer doesn't mean it's better. You know, it may have specific problems, like, you know, they could have better defined the definition of money in the Constitution so that there would be none of these private bankers, you know, taking over the production of our money and charging us usury for it.
Well, you know what? I got to interrupt you there because I just found something out that James Madison really did clearly define what money was. It was traitors who allowed it to morph into something else. They very plainly said what that was. I just wanted to get that in. But I understand what Nick is saying, how the Constitution is transformed. They're talking about it now as a living document, whereas the Founding Fathers, James Madison, wanted it to be concrete, set in stone. But over time...
Well, Madison, there's a lot of evidence that Madison was actually working for the bankers. There's a very good book on that, The Law Science of Money by Stephen Zarlinga, that goes into the history of Madison and the Thomas Jefferson, and basically Madison wrote 20 or 30 pages, and Thomas Jefferson wrote 5, and, you know, Madison just overwhelmed him with words, and that was how he really won the argument, so to speak, and Thomas Jefferson was just overly silent on the matters of how the banking system would be set up. But yeah, get that book if anybody's interested in that. You get that from monetary.org. Don't try and get that from Amazon.
Monetary.org?
Yes, that's the American Monetary Institute.
Oh, rats, another break. Oh, we can push that one a little bit. All right, another commercial break, but this is a short one. We'll be back really, really quick. Don't go anywhere. There's a lot of brainstorming left to do. This is The Rage, FM 107, AM 1240.
Opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the talk station, its management, or ownership.
This is The Rage.
The Rage.
Miles, have you ever taken a serious political stand on anything?
Yeah, sure. For 24 hours once, I refused to eat grapes.
Miles.
Wait a minute, I like this part.
Everyone here has a citizen's record. We've all been computerized, cataloged, fingerprinted, photographed, voice printed. But you have no number. Miles, you've got to help us.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. I'd love to help you out, but I never get involved in anything where I could be tortured.
Get your rage on. Call 1-800-818-2255.
I thought that was the other one. But that's my second favorite organ. I always liked Woody Allen, and his logic, for that matter. Makes a lot of sense to me. This is The Rage, FM 107, AM 1240, your voice in the darkness. I haven't mentioned it, but we are talking to Jan Irwin from Gnostic... Jan Irwin from GnosticMedia.com. Everybody needs to go there. There is a tremendous resource there. You can expand your knowledge. There are podcasts after podcasts of some of the most interesting people in the world, viewpoints that you really need to open your mind to. Got to get out of this box, folks. You got to get out of this box. And the first thing you have to do is recognize that you're in a box. And if you're paying attention tonight, if you're paying attention, you're going to be able to see it. And you're going to be able to climb out of that box. And you're going to help other people climb out of that box. So, no further ado, let's get back to Jan Ervin. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah.
Aaron?
Oh,
go ahead.
He was asleep. There was a slap in there.
Yeah, but go ahead, Jan. Wherever you want to pick up at, or
you know, one thing I wanted to comment on was your comment on Black's Law Dictionary. That now, see, that one doesn't give you a lot of the etymology and going back and finding out where they use the tactic of things just disappear, or they move it, like things like de novo and de anything else. They'll put all those together unless there's one that they really want to hide, and then they leave off the D part and move it. Whoops! Slapped the microphone. Move it to the next part so that you got to go to a totally different place to find it, and then it says go here, go here, go here. So they leave a labyrinth so that you could eventually get tired and you're going to end up not knowing what the word.
And that's the whole idea in the first place, but you have to, at the same time, you need to have it so that you can understand the rhetoric and the game that they are playing. And, you know, you can make that a point of an argument, you know. Look at how many times they say, go here, go here, go here, to come to the conclusion, I had to go here 8 different times to find out that the word meant this, and this seems that they're attempting to obfuscate what the word in that specific or instance or use under the political system means. So that, regardless of using the Oxford or the Webster's Third New International, it's still important to have that other layer of understanding in there to know of those possibilities.
And you know that they use this very heavily, because anybody could go read, say, for example, Title 26, United States Code, having to do with the Internal Revenue Service, and you will see that they redefine words just about every paragraph or section of it. And if you've ever read the Patriot Act, the Patriot Act uses that same tactic. It says, we're going to change this word, the, to for, in, and then they'll use these statutory numbers and references that go all over the place. And not that the document isn't ridiculously long anyway, but considering that it has all of these references in every sentence, probably 3 or 4 of them in every sentence, to go through the document takes years. It really does. It's unbelievable.
But somebody typed it up in 12 hours, man. How can you say that?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Let me look under the logical fallacies to see which one that is. Oh, yeah, ignoramum. That's the one. Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No problem.
Go ahead.
Well, you know, let's go into a few things here. But we talked about the single-room schoolhouse last week. I thought that we should really talk about that, because it's so important an issue to get people to understand how the trivium works, how teaching and learning works, because, you know, guess what, folks? The best education system that this country ever had was the single-room schoolhouse. And the reason why that was is that when you give kids the trivium, and when each class above teaches the one below what they learned the year before, You learn the best by teaching others what you've learned. And so for 12 years or however many years the kids were in school, probably 8 years back then, they would all teach each other this information and build off of each other, so that by the time they left school, not only had they learned it, not only had the teacher interacted, but they had to teach it to many other students along the way. So they learned the ins and outs of these things like the trivium or like even rhetoric, which we'll go into the logical fallacies in a minute, but they had experience with these things because that was the goal, was the students taught each other, and then that made us one of the most powerful industrial nations on Earth, if not the most at the time. And
I've got to ask, though, back when the trivium and the one-room schoolhouse and all that, when that was going on in this country, the people that were eligible to receive that education, it wasn't your farmers, it wasn't your everyday Joes. It was more privileged, wasn't it? Was it not?
Well, yes and no. It actually depended on the town or the community and what each town and community had established. But, sometimes it was for the wealthier. But, what's interesting is, I forget the name of the book. Maybe it was Thomas Nast or something like that. But they had printed, the country had only had 7 million people living in the country at the time, and they sold like 600,000 or 700,000 copies of this book. And, and it was read and discussed by the general population very widely. And John Taylor Gatto goes very deeply into that history. So if you're really looking for an answer to that question, I would turn to his book, Underground History of American Education. The book may have been Thomas Paine's Common Sense, but it sold literally hundreds of thousands of copies at the time when the country's population was very small, but it was a bestseller even by the highest standards of today. And so these are things that we need to take into consideration. I know that they've pushed a lot on us that people in the 1700s and 1800s weren't as well off as today, and in some instances that's true because of servitude and things like that. But I think overall, when you realize and you get into the trivium method and you look at how ancient cultures, like how the Egyptians had it and how so many ancient cultures had it and used it, you go, oh my God, all of these people weren't stupid like we're taught to believe. These people anciently had the highest abilities of critical thinking, and in many ways would outdo our own people, our own population today, just because this stuff has been removed. And in fact, in Athens and Greece, everybody in the entire town was taught rhetoric, was taught the trivium, and they would go and they would debate in the town square when they would pass laws and everything. Everybody would come down and debate the issues. Everybody had to partake in the republic. And then later on, an oligarchy came in and took everything over and squashed everybody. But they suppressed the trivium at that point within Greece, and Greece became sort of a subservient society like we've got right now. But that's the goal, is if we want freedom, we have to do our homework. We have to get a mental antivirus going, because if you're going around on the internet without antivirus, without a firewall, without any security, you're wide open to everything out there. And by having the trivium, you literally give yourself literally certainty of anything that you're looking at, any information that comes in through your five senses. You can look at that and you can break it down. It's a methodology for attaining certainty consistently and for dealing with the unknown and the fear that comes with it. And so that's really what it comes down to, is gaining that certainty with anything that's coming into your field.
And that's great. That's I get it. I get the whole idea behind the trivium. But I what I want to know is how to effectively implement this type of learning within our general population. You got any ideas on that for me?
Well, I'm doing my best right now.
That's what we're all doing right now.
That's exactly what we're doing right now. We literally have to create a meme of it, and we have to pass it around, because, see, how they won was by taking it away from everybody and keeping it for the elite and for the ruling class. And so we have to undo that and give it back to everybody. And it's actually a very good way to judge people's character. When you give them the trivium, if they covet it and want to take control of their employees and use it against people, you know that that's not a very good person that you ever want to deal with. So it's also a very revealing tool. And then get it out there and give it to everyone.
You're listening to The Rage, FM 107, AM 1240. We've got a short break, but we'll be right back. And we're talking about the Trivium, the prophylactic against being conned. We'll be right back. Wow, that's a new one. And you're listening to The Voices in the Dark. This is The Rage, FM 107, AM 1240, your live voice in the darkness this late at night on a Saturday night. And if you're not out killing brain cells, you're sitting here and you're listening and growing your brain cells. And this is really important because basically, in layman's terms, what you're learning tonight from Jan Ervin and the people here in the studio is how not to be a sucker. You're being suckered politically, economically, socially, educationally, every way. You're being played
religiously.
You're being played for a sucker. Learn how not to be a sucker. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Aaron and Jan.
Thanks a lot, Ketch. And, you know, before we went to the break, I know the last thing you mentioned, Jan, was about how the Trivium can test somebody's moral fabric. And, you know, those that don't know the Trivium will obviously be dominated by the people that do know the Trivium. And,
exactly.
And one coincidence, you know, and I don't believe in coincidence, but Aristotle, he died in 322. You know, what's one of those famous secret societies we got in the country here? You know, Skull and Bones, 322, the Order of the Death's Heads with the Nazis. You know, and I know the 322 actually was connected to Aristotle for the Skull and Bones Society.
Yeah, and, you know, and the Trivium acts as a litmus test for people. And, you know, what's interesting is it works on several different levels. When it works in one way, when you present it to someone, see, when people understand logic and rhetoric and the Trivium method and everything, you learn to never kill the messenger. You always hear what the message is first, and it, you know, take what's valid in it, disregard the rest, and you're done with it. You know, if you get into page one of the counter of whatever the messenger is bringing you, and the first sentence has five or six or seven logical fallacies, which happens often, you can probably disregard the rest of it as intentionally sophist, which is a sophist. Which is where we get the word sophisticated from, is somebody who lies or who argues not for truth but to win. And so the sophists were always figuring out new ways to trick people and manipulate them. They would learn the Trivium and then create all of these systems of false argumentation to fool the public. So that's who took over, literally. The sophists, the sophisticated, the elites took over by using the false rhetoric against us. And, you know, the Trivium forms a habitual pattern of, in the mind of how to think effectively, not what to think. So instead of just taking all of this news and information that they feed us in the media and everything, it literally teaches us how to break it down effectively to attain certainty consistently so that you always know that what you're breaking down to is factual, is truth by the definitions of the words, whether it's one possibility or two or three or whatever the case is. You understand clearly what the options are, what needs to be further investigated, or if not, you understand the single point regardless of whatever others are telling you. And so that's really the whole point. And, you know, today, general education or public education is about social engineering, not about creating independent thinkers. And that's what we have to take back. And that's the whole game of the, quote-unquote, New World Order. It's outthinking the masses. And so the quicker people pick up, the quicker we spread the Trivium meme to everybody out there, the better chance we have. And, in fact, after researching different things and different methods, different movements for the last 20 years, I've come to the conclusion that the Trivium method is the only chance we have, because the issue becomes, you know, we want to focus on the roots of the problem. You don't want to go out and try and cut down a redwood tree by whacking at the pine needles, you know. It's going to take you a long time to bring down a 1,000-year-old tree, you know, and excuse, I don't want to pick on redwoods because I know they're sacred trees, but I'm just using it as an example. But if we get down there and we understand the roots, if we understand the tree as a whole, we can step back and look at the tree and we can say, oh, okay, this is a tree. It has branches above that have pine needles. It's got this long trunk. It's got these roots. This is the concept of a tree. Now I know what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with this tree. Now how do I, using logic, once we know what we're dealing with, then we can become to have understanding of what we need to do to handle that tree. And so, you know, the quickest way to bring down the tree is to go to the roots or to cut it at the base, you know, and that's how you take something down. You have to go to the root of the problem. That's why it's called the root. You have to step back and understand the big picture. And the Trivium method gives you this ability, instead of jumping to conclusions, hasty generalizations, all of the logical fallacies that are out there that they love to use against us, like appeal to belief and all of these things, you come to certainty. And so we might as well go into some of the
logical fallacies now.
Yeah, let me get a sip of water here. Do you want to start off on one or two, Aaron?
Yeah, and you know what? First, I want to say I think we got 2 minutes before the break, but I definitely want to say, you know, from me coming into contact with this Trivium method, I feel the same way that you do, Jan, that this is the most important thing, the most effective tool that we have to combat the propaganda and really take down the machine that they got constructed.
Neutralizes them.
Having the Trivium, we actually got their playbook. We know what they're
right.
using against us.
We armor ourselves completely against them, and by doing so, we neutralize them. We make them completely ineffective. The political rhetoric, the religious rhetoric, the lawyers, all of that stuff, the marketing and PR and the corporate rhetoric, it all becomes neutralized, and we can all go back to thinking again. Let's start off with ad hominem.
Ad hominem, yes.
That's one of the most common ones, and it starts with A up at the top. But ad hominem is attacking the man. It's when there's a discussion about something, somebody will say, well, that person lives on Elm Street, and so therefore anything he has to say is crud. Or that person is a Republican or a Democrat or a liberal or whatever the case may be. And the goal is, in going back to not killing the messenger, that's what Plato's allegory of the cave is. You know, you always listen to the information that's being brought to you, filter it through the Trivium, take what's valid, disregard what's not, and move on. And so this way you understand that when the messenger brings you a message and somebody yells an ad hominem attack at him, look at that messenger, he's wearing green today, you know, oh, you know, he's trying to trick me into not listening to what he has to say, and you hear him out. And even if it's garbage, at least then you know it's garbage for certain. You're not taking it on somebody else's opinion. There's all sorts of appeal to fallacies. There's appeal to authority, appeal to belief, which is, you know, somebody says, well, you know, if you don't do this, God is going to come down and crash, you know, all of the, like Jerry Falwell said after 9/11, the attack on 9/11 was because of the gays and lesbians, and if we don't get rid of them all, God's going to come down and cause more havoc and more terrorism on our country. And, you know, these are appeal to belief and appeal to fear fallacies. There's also appeal to flattery, which bosses love to use in the workplace. You're wearing a really nice suit today, or I like that new haircut. But we'll go into some more logical fallacies when we get back from the break.
You're listening to Jan Irvin from GnosticMedia.com.
There's one little thing that I wanted to bring into this, but we got 7 seconds. Never mind. We'll be right back after the news.
Have you been putting off getting health insurance because you think it's too expensive or you don't qualify? Now is your chance to get the health coverage you want for a lot less than you thought. With the Synergy Health Preferred Insurance Plan, you can finally have health coverage for your everyday medical needs, including doctor visits, lab tests, x-rays, maternity, emergencies, and hospital stays. Our limited medical insurance plan even covers surgeries with no deductibles and no annual limits. Best of all, with Synergy Health Preferred, you can choose your own doctors and hospitals. And Synergy Health accepts applicants regardless of most pre-existing medical conditions. Enroll today by calling 1-800-213-5019. Don't put off your health for another day. For individual and family coverage, call 1-800-213-5019. That's
easy starting, reliable engines. Built in America for 100 years. Briggs & Stratton, the power within.
Now that sounds like a Briggs & Stratton engine.
Of course it does. Who would buy anything else?
The views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the talk station, its management, or ownership.
All I know is at first, you've got to get mad.
This is the Rage.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
What is truth and what they want you to believe
may not be the same thing.
Welcome back to The Rage, FM 107, AM 1240. We're going to cut that a little bit short, and I do want to apologize. We had a little discussion. They changed some things on the computer that run this whole thing, and that there was a minute of music coming into the top of the hour break, which last break I thought we had the minute, but Nick wisely cut it back to 30 seconds. He just neglected to tell me that he was doing that, but it still worked out okay. And what we're talking about is learning how to critically think to save yourself in this world that's opening up in front of us. A lot of things that are fixing to happen that if you have a knowledge of the trivium and how to critically think, you'll be able to see through it. And what I'm talking about is false flag operations that are coming up that we can get a historical perspective on now that we've had these documents released about Pearl Harbor, the Gulf of Tonkin, and many other things right up to the Gulf of Mexico. These are false flag operations. We've got things in the works. War with Iran, expanding the wars, doing away with the United States, breaking up the European Union. All of these false flag things going on, they're just distractions. And with Jan's help from GnosticMedia.com, we're going to see if we can see through all of that stuff. Turn the program back over to Aaron and Jan.
Jan, how's it going, man? You want to just pick up on the logical fallacies where we left off at? We just went over the ad hominem attack.
Sure, and we went over some of the appeal fallacies as well. And I wanted to mention to people that they can also, aside from my Gnostic Media website, they can go to 534trivium.anything.com.net.org, and they can sort of follow along with what we're going through here. There's some information up there, more reading, more material available as well. I just started the website last week, so just to warn everybody, it's not pretty, but it's the content that's important. And so let's talk about a straw man argument, since you were just talking about false flag operations, which I'm very familiar with, having lived in former Yugoslavia for 16 months. I saw a lot of false flag operations going on against, pretty much everybody was bombing their own people every time CNN would pull in. But and pretty much the whole war got blamed on the Serbs when they certainly weren't the antagonists in many ways. So false flag operations are a straw man. Another straw man is a corporation, in fact. A corporation is a straw man human being. And basically what a straw man is like a scarecrow. It's not a real person. It's a straw man. You put it out there in the field, and it's there to scare off the crows who think it's a real person. It's a straw man. It's not a real person. And so what a lot of people will do is, in a straw man argument, they'll pretend to represent your argument, create an argument that's very similar to it, and then debunk that argument, pretending to have debunked yours. That's a very common tactic. Another one is red herring. And a red herring comes from back in the old days when they would train hunting dogs. If you had a hunting dog and he was chasing after a fox, when they would train the dogs to make sure that they were fully qualified, what they would do is they would drag a herring across the trail to see if they could distract the dog to follow the smell of the fish rather than to keep on the trail of the fox. So this is called a red herring. It's taking the dog off of the path of what's happening, distracting him onto this fish. And so another one is equivocation, and that is the fallacy when a term is used in two or more different sentences within a single argument. So we talked about that a little bit earlier. And, you know, somebody right in the middle of a debate, they take an entirely different meaning of a word that you've already defined. So that's a fallacy. And that's often used in rhetoric or political debate and things like that. Another one that is really a politician's favorite is the slippery slope fallacy. You know, we can't legalize marijuana. People will be shooting heroin and crack cocaine in the street next week. You know, these are slippery slope fallacies. They're not based on anything factual. It's just an appeal to fear and a slippery slope. Another common fallacy, one of the most common fallacies that you hear by religionists especially, is the begging the question fallacy, or circular reasoning. And excuse me. An argument is circular if its conclusion is among its premises, if it assumes that basically what it is trying to prove. Such an argument is said to beg the question. A circular argument fails as proof because it will only be judged to be sound by those who already accept its conclusion. So, like when somebody says, when you get into a discussion about religion, and somebody says, well, that's the holy word of God. Well, how do you know it's the holy word of God? Well, it says so right here in the Bible. And so that's called begging the question. It's circular logic. You can't go back to the original source to prove the point. So going on to other logical fallacies, there's burden of proof. A claim X is presented by side A, and then the burden of proof rests on side B. Side B claims that X is false because there is no proof for it. And I'm going to switch over to a couple of other different fallacies, like there's the fallacist fallacy, which you have to be careful when you're studying logic and rhetoric as well, because what you don't want to do is, just because something is proved to be a fallacious argument doesn't always necessarily mean it's false. So you have to be careful and fact check and look into the information, regardless if the argument presented is fallacious or poorly constructed. So that's called the fallacist fallacy. And there are affirming consent, arguing from ignorance, and why don't you guys pick some of the fallacies that you would like to go into? There's probably about 80 of them. I don't want to bore the audience by talking about too many of these, but so many of them are very important for people to really understand how the media and the politicians and everybody else uses these things to manipulate and literally to mind control us.
Well, you already covered my favorite one, tautology, the circular argument. I mean, that's me. That's what I'm all about. That's what I love. The old catch 22. What's your favorite? What's your favorite?
Oh, I think one of the favorite logical fallacies that I've found was the fallacy of two wrongs, which means everybody else is doing it, so I guess I should just go ahead and do it too. You know, or everybody else is going along with this, so I guess I don't want to fight the flow.
Yeah, that's the bandwagon fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the post hoc fallacy Basically, an earthquake happened on Saturday, and Friday night, a black cat crossed my path before I went into my house. So therefore, the black cat crossing my path is the cause of the earthquake. That's a post hoc fallacy. Guilt by association is another good one. XYZ person is a thief, and therefore that person XYZ, and therefore you're also a thief.
Well, I find this fascinating. You know, I'm familiar with several of these fallacies, but a lot of them are new to me, and it's interesting because I know what they are, but to give them a name, that's
really the idea, is you have to learn to identify exactly what they are, and it's not even enough really to identify them in English. If you really want to get good at this stuff, you need to identify them in Latin, because this whole practice goes all the way back to the Romans, and so all of these things like post hoc, cum hoc fallacy, these go back to the original Latin names.
This is amazing stuff, folks. Are you soaking all this up? You've heard it from every car salesman and furniture salesman. And you hear it every day on television. You're listening to The Rage, FM 107 AM 1240. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rage. This is FM 107 AM 1240. This is your live voice in the darkness. We are learning and speaking about critical thinking tonight. And when you want to get right back into that, our guest tonight is Jan Ervin from GnosticMedia.com. And we'll go over the other websites where you can gather more information on this, because this is the most important thing that you need to know. Because once you know this, it will change how you look at everything else. You know, we're talking about these things, logical fallacies. Jan, can you bridge the gap? We discuss a lot dialectics, specifically as things transform, what we now call the Hegelian dialectic, which is not actually the Hegelian dialectic as we
interpret
it today. It's missing a few. But one is a form of thinking, one is a form of argument. Can you tell us how we can relate the two?
Well, and I'm not an expert on the Hegelian dialectic per se, but, it's basically using opposing forms and typically new information to propose new ideas in general, and it can be used by sophists to propose wrong ideas or possibilities that, just because they're possible, they're used to derail a conversation, basically. But in dialectic, what people need to understand is that under the trivium method, which is grammar, logic, and dialectic, it should be logic/dialectic, because the dialectic falls directly under logic, and looking at different possibilities, looking at different angles of things, and understanding the different possibilities that are there. And so using the Hegelian dialectic is basically like they're throwing things out to distract us, and while they're doing something else over here, like 9/11 is a perfect example of a Hegelian dialectic. But there's, I forgot what I was going to say.
On the Hegelian dialectic, we've kind of narrowed it down to a problem, reaction, solution. And
yes,
in general
exactly.
terms, that is what it is. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And that's basically what it is, but the Hegelian dialectic requires polarization. And as a result of any application of the trivium by the elite or the instigators to control both sides. And that is how these things get manipulated against us, because most of the time they are controlling both sides of the argument with false fallacy.
the Democrats and Republicans is a Hegelian dialectic. That's something that they play on us intentionally. And then what they do is one becomes the bad guy every 4 or 8 years. People don't study history anymore. They don't read, so they forget everything every 4 to 8 years, and then they just do it all over again, and they just change teams. So this is another dialectic that they use, and you actually defined it much better than I did, so I appreciate that. I had another good Hegelian dialectic that came to mind, and then it just slipped my mind when I was describing the other one. But
one of the things that's got me confused is all of these highly educated people, all of these Harvard graduates and Ivy League graduates and everything, and they come on in this last crisis. Oh, we couldn't see it coming. September 11th. Oh, we had never had an idea that they would ever fly planes into a building as a weapon. You know, I don't understand how these college people claim to not know this, but yet a regular con man on the street in New York or Philadelphia or Chicago, they see this. This is a scam. It's a con. How come the middle class people can't see it? I mean, understanding using the big words trivium dialectic,
well,
but it's
what
a con.
What you have to realize is just because somebody has a doctor's degree or went to any of the universities doesn't necessarily mean that they got the trivium method. Typically, it's very select people, like, say, if they're even in the Skull and Bones or something like that, who would be trained in all of these different arts. But, you know, there's obviously an exception, and it depends on, you know, if somebody is made aware of the trivium method and they go in and study the arts and go in and study philosophy, because the trivium is the foundation of the quadrivium, which I'll touch on for just, a few minutes here in a second. But then from there it goes into philosophy and understanding philosophy, like Plato's Republic and all of these things that they would, how they do these things. You know, and do we really want to believe that all these people didn't see it coming? And I think they had even had war games at one point where they had used crashing into the buildings.
On September 11th, Dick Cheney was running it.
Right, exactly.
And Condi was in on it and everything, you know. I was just using that as an example, because the con man on the street, he might not know that what he's talking about is false dichotomies and all that, and the trivium and the quadrivium and everything, but he's smart enough to understand when he's being conned. He can feel when somebody got their hand in his pocket or up his butt. Sorry.
You know, one thing that I wanted to mention real quick before I forget is the eugenicists.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, that's such an important issue, because the eugenicists actually, they hide behind Darwin's theory of evolution to propagate these racist theories that are really based on, you know, in the 1800s, I forget what the name of the book was off the top of my head, but Darwin actually wrote one book that said that if anybody bred with Irish people, that in, I think, 6 or 7 generations or something like that, we'd be apes again, is basically what he said. And, you know, and there's all this these kinds of things in there. And so the eugenicists they take away the trivium method from us, and then they say that those groups of people are stupid and ignorant, et cetera, and that they're better than them because they took that tool away. You know, and it's like the same. Would you break the legs of a lamb and then kick it because it couldn't stand up thereafter? You know, you don't offer somebody a hand up while you're stepping on their face. You know, and that's the issue that's going on here, is that they're taking the trivium away, and then they can sit there and say, well, look at all the dumb masses. They can't think. You know, look how easily we control them with Rush Limbaugh and with... Mm-hmm. You know, name one of them, pick one. But they just throw the stuff out there, and people slop it up like hogs to the trough. And it's disgusting to watch how far away good, willing, open-hearted, generous Americans, how suckered into all of this stuff they've become, and how lacking in critical thinking the average American has become. You know, and that's why it's so important to pass this type of information out to everybody, because the only way, like we keep saying tonight, the only way that we can foresee to come out of this, see, this issue applies to everything else out there. When you're looking at any other issue, when the politicians talk, when anybody else is doing anything, you know how to cut through the crap and get to the facts. And that's what they don't want the masses to be able to do. That is their number one fear, is for us to start thinking, because you know what? There's a lot more of us than there are of them. And when the masses wake up and realize that it's only, you know, the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain pulling all the strings, we're going to take the thing over and throw these jerks out that have enslaved the entire world, have, you know, stolen resources. We're 5% of the world's population using 25% of its resources, and most of that is to keep these, a lot of these elitists who don't do anything, don't contribute anything of value to society, so they can sit on their fat butts milking off of us and live in their huge mansions. You know, that they need 50 or 60 staff members to maintain these, some of these homes. It's absurd. You know, it's like live within your own, you know, there comes a point when, you know, and granted we should all have freedom, but, you know, when it comes at the expense of everybody else, from free trade agreements to get the stuff in here, from, you know, breaking the backs of all the Americans, from sending our jobs overseas so that the CEOs and the stockholders can make all the profits and send our jobs overseas. I mean, what kind of patriotic American does that? You know, they don't. And that's why they set up straw man arguments like the corporations, and that's why we need to end corporate personhood and, you know,
and
take
it back. Which they just expanded.
Yeah.
They made it even worse.
Right, exactly, and we need to pull it back to where it's a public charter, to where every year they got to come to us, the people, and say, hey, can we renew this? We're doing work for the people, for the public of this country, and that's what a corporate charter was originally intended for, was for doing good for the people here in this country, not for taking over the whole world and going to China and making cheap junk and dumping it off over here so that our quality of everything drops. And
the views and opinions expressed in this program are not necessarily those of the talk station, its management, or ownership.
The Rage. Call now. 1-800-818-2255.
I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the crying in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
The Rage.
I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The Rage. Call now. 1-800-818-2255.
The Rage.
Welcome back to The Rage. This is FM 107 AM 1240. This is your live voice in the darkness. Joining us at the round table tonight, we have Aaron and we have Jesse on the board. We have Nick, and our special guest is Jan Irvin. And I'm sorry, I keep getting that wrong because I learned it wrong in the first place. Apologize for the last break. I was hoping that you'd finish up before the break went out and nobody needs to hear what I had to say.
Hey,
but I think
you know,
got a little...
happens.
I think you got a little clipped off there at the end. Would you like to back up a little bit?
I don't even remember what I was saying, so I'm over it.
Now, you know, you mentioned Darwinism, and I wanted to bring this back because I look at this as kind of a logical fallacy, a false dichotomy. And that was in our founding documents where it says all men are created equal. Now, to,
right.
to me, that's a con. I don't believe that to be true, do you?
Well, I think as far as us being born out of a womb and, you know, are you asking about
wealth? I'm talking about the way that they probably meant it. I mean, it was to they're saying that they're just like us, but that's not exactly what I think.
Well, it's like, you know, it's like Lincoln argued that, you know, when they tried to bring in the Prussian education system in the 1800s, Lincoln fought against it because he believed that the rich and the poor were equal and that they should all have the equal trivium education. So Lincoln actually did fight for everybody to have the the Trivium method.
But he also wasn't against slavery.
You know, what's that?
He also wasn't against slavery.
No, he wasn't. And the whole idea that the Civil War was about slavery is completely false. It was about banking, but that's
exactly
the whole
right.
issue.
That's exactly right.
And you have to dig in and find out these things. You know, Lincoln, you know, he was a president. He had to be bought off by somebody, but he also wasn't playing the game exactly how they wanted him to, and that's why the bankers had him
shot. I find the irony in the eugenicists claiming or flying under the flag, all men are created equal. It kind of gives them that little thing that, you know, we're all created equal. They can't be trying to kill off just a part of us.
Yeah, well, it's just like how, you know, they dress up these big wars and then they tell us that it's in our best interest to go halfway around the world and go fight some other country for their oil or whatever, or because of some puppet leader named Saddam Hussein that we put into power, or because Slobodan Milosevic isn't playing by the corporate game and playing his own rules in the middle of Europe. And, you know, you have to get in there and you have to discover for yourself. So, yeah, these are all the different dichotomies and things that they use against us.
One of them you were asking earlier that in the logical fallacies is confusing association with causation, where it's a post hoc fallacy that assumes that the cause and effect for two variables are the same simply because they occurred together. And I think that
right.
we're seeing that with, you know, things like 9-1-1 was one thing, but is Muslims and it happened in airplanes, it's all the same time, and we're going to go ahead and have two of the longest wars that we've ever had, and please don't ask any more questions, all the men are created equal. No.
Right, even though half the people that were said to be the Muslim terrorists have been found to be still alive and working in various jobs in the Middle East and other places, and never mind that stuff, right? But, yeah, and we're also supposed to believe that these Muslim terrorists living in caves in Afghanistan managed to pull off the insider trading using, you know, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and things like that to use special software that Richard Andrew Grove, who's been out there in the 9-1-1 truth movement. He was a whistleblower. He actually was selling the software from Legato, I believe it was, that was used on the insider trading on 9-11. And when he was in a meeting one day, they were asking him how the back door worked in the software and how they could change things. And he blew the whistle, and they didn't like him too well for that. But, you know, certainly the Arab quote-unquote terrorists had nothing to do with that stuff, and we need to look closer at, you know, who's behind banking and
who controls
the banking systems and things like that, and then we can begin to go from there and figure out who pulled these things off.
I think in the negativism, in the switch between positivism and negativism, there's some interesting dialogue that can develop, because a negative cannot be proven.
Correct.
And you know, and even in
you
our
can't
justice
prove system, that, you know, if you, yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, in our legal system, you know, people will go, well, I'm going to prove myself innocent. You can't prove yourself innocent. You can only prove yourself not guilty. And there is a difference, especially in law.
Correct.
You can only prove, if there was a murder, you can only prove that you weren't there when the murder and you didn't have nothing to do with it. So it's a negativism thing. The positive side of that doesn't work. And you know, a lot of our founding documents are based on negativism.
It's just like
the Bill of Rights to the Constitution.
It's just like the forfeiture laws for the whole war on drugs. You know, they forfeit property, and then literally under the how they've changed the entire Bill of Rights for the war on drugs is that the property has to prove itself innocent for you to get your property back. Now, how does your property prove itself innocent? You know, so they make it virtually impossible for anybody who they've stolen the property from, whether they were growing a pot plant or whatever, you know, in a that's a whole other topic that we don't need to go into today, but
that's how,
you know,
people lose their IRS cases too. They go in to prove themselves innocent. Can't do it.
Right.
Anyhow, Aaron, What you got?
Yeah, I don't know. Just one. Where would you like to take things off? I know Nick had a question for you.
What about the quadrivium? We want to get to that too.
Yeah, well, let's cover the quadrivium for a minute here first, because I think it's important for people to understand that after studying the trivium, that's not it. See, the trivium is what we should have been taught really in junior high school, right? And then there was all of this stuff like math and geometry and music and astronomy, and then as well as philosophy and other things at other levels, theology, that are taught at higher levels. So the next step that we go into from the trivium, and once you have a good foundation of the trivium, then you know, sort of naturally start to progress into the quadrivium if you're properly questioning and searching for answers, as you should be. But the quadrivium is composed of, as I was just saying, mathematics, which is number in itself, which is a pure abstraction and outside of space and time. Next is geometry. And once again, this is what is composed of the seven liberal arts. This is what makes a liberal education. And the first ones, again, with the trivium, grammar, logic, dialectic, and rhetoric, and then the third one being rhetoric, the fourth one being math, the fifth one is geometry, which is number in space, the sixth one is music or harmony, which is number in time, the seventh is astronomy, which is number in space and time. And so when you study all of these things in these systematic methods, in fact, you know, basically, the trivium method, as far as Aristotle making it more firm, but from its origins even older than that, and there's evidence that the quadrivium may go back even further as well. But the trivium and the quadrivium, they're about 4,000 years old, and it's still considered the best system of learning and education in the world today, thousands of years after it was created.
It is, it's mind-boggling how all of this has gotten by us for so long. There had to be, we got a minute coming up before the break. This has been pulled over their eyes for so long, even without it being taught. There has to be a huge number of people who, like I said, didn't know what to call it, but were cognizant enough, I don't want to say smart enough, aware enough to see something's wrong with this picture. And through basic, people possess the basic skills to be able to do this in analyzing logic. So, I mean, when you're getting into the quadrivium, this sounds so complicated, but it really isn't, is it? It is basically getting the concept down, and as you become more familiar with the concept, the details kind of fall into place, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly right. The more proficient you become with the trivium, and the quadrivium for that matter, the more you realize how the whole system is working, and you know, you begin to see through all of it, all of the stuff that's going on. And if we can create a meme of that, we can really change the way that everything has been going. We can bring on real solutions. And that's what we have to have. There's no other option.
I just, things, when they sound complicated, don't worry about it. Get the concept first. The details will follow. This is The Rage, FM 107 AM 1240. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to wrap up Critical Thinking 101 for tonight. Welcome back to The Rage, FM 107, AM 1240. For those of you who have hung with us all night, feeding your brain cells instead of out there killing them, we do appreciate it. We hope that you got something out of it with our special guest tonight, Jan Irvin, and he has taught us about critical thinking. His website, GnosticMedia.com, good place to start. He has got some new ones up, and I'm looking for where I wrote it down, and my notes, which is totaling about 12 pages now and can't find it.
534trivium.com.
Boy, that's a tough one. Or .net or .org, right? I remember that.
Yeah, or they can, if they can't handle that one, they can go to Trivium Education as well, and it'll take them to the same place.
And we will get that up. You can link to that directly through our site, which all you have to do is go to thetalkstation.com, which many of you are already there. Find the Rage links. Click right over. We'll take you to our webpage, and you can go off and run in there. You will find a lot of other information that will support exactly what we're talking about tonight. In real time, in the events happening today, the false flags, the false dichotomies that they're putting out, by the ton every day. Every day, distractions, distractions, distractions. Aaron, we're closing in. Jan, have you got anything you'd like to put in closing? We've got 6 minutes before we're out of here.
Well, I would just, say to people, get out there and start reading the books available out there on the Trivium. Start listening to the available information. Start studying about, John Taylor Gatto, who wrote The Underground History of American Education. Start reading people like Buckminster Fuller, his book Critical Path. These types of things so that people can get their head around. Another book is The Trivium by Sister Miriam Joseph. Another one is Metalogicon by John of Salisbury. That's actually 900 years old, and it's a fantastic read on it. And they can get The Trivium of Classical Education by Dr. Randall Hartz. But, the thing is get out there, stop being lazy, and stop letting people tell you what to think. You have to take charge, and if we continue as a nation to be lazy and act like little babies, and we need mommy and daddy, the government, to hand us all of our information and do all of our thinking for us, we're not going to win this. So you got to stop being lazy, and you have to get out there and start reading, doing your homework, figuring this stuff out, because it's our only chance.
And this stuff is real, folks. This is not a game. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is the real thing. This material world, this perception, what is happening is the real thing. And as a rule of thumb, if it doesn't make sense to you, you are probably the victim of a logical fallacy. If it doesn't make sense, apply the logic. Apply the Trivium first, and you'll figure it out.
Close and before, when people get those chain emails, make sure that you check out the information, because there's always so much false rhetoric and appeal to belief and appeal to fear and tradition and all these different things.
Especially on this immigration thing. Oh, my God.
Stop before you click the forward button. Look at the information. Look at the logical fallacies. Understand what it is and then correct it and send it back where it came from, corrected with the factual information. And we talked about last week about the immigration issue being a red herring to keep people distracted from the bankers and what's really going on over there. Usually whenever the bankers are screwing up the whole world, they drum up the illegal immigrant issue so that people blame the illegal immigrants on the economy being screwed up, on there not being any jobs. When what they don't realize is that if you go back to 1993 and you do a little bit of homework, you'll realize that Ross Perot, during his presidential campaign way back then, 17 years ago, told us that if we passed the free trade agreements, GATT, NAFTA, these agreements, and allowed the corporations to do what they did to Mexico, which was the big thing that caused the largest amount of immigration into the United States, was we went and we dumped a whole bunch of genetically modified corn on Mexico's markets and indigenous farmers, wiped out their corn markets, wiped out all of these ancient strains of corn that they've been breeding for hundreds or thousands of years, contaminated a lot of the Mexican farmers' fields with GMO corn, and literally put these people out of work. And then we turn around and we blame them for coming across the border. Now, if people want to argue about what all the gun running and the drugs happening in southern Arizona right now, well, if people were using the Trivium, if you want to solve the problem, you legalize drugs, you take the profit away from these criminals from doing this stuff, and guess what, folks? They can't do it anymore. But as long as the criminals and the politicians are in charge, as long as the banks are laundering their money through the drug cartels, just like Wachovia and I think Bank of America were just busted for doing, then, you know, they're the ones paying for that stuff. They're the ones that want to keep the war on drugs going, and it's been failing for 70 years. Alcohol prohibition didn't work, and if you think drug prohibition does, you need to use some critical thinking, folks. You know, if you want to have criminals in charge of the drugs, keep it illegal. If you want a pharmacist or a doctor or a store manager, like with alcohol, who has to card you before a minor can get a hold of it, then you legalize it and you control it. But right now, if you think the war on drugs is protecting any child in this country, go to a high school. If you want to get drugs, the easiest place to go get drugs is you find a high school student, and he'll get you anything you want. They have access to everything because it's illegal and on the black market. If you want to control it, you don't give it to the criminals to control. You have to use common sense and critical thinking, and you have to stop blaming the people who are the victims. You don't blame the rape victim for being raped. Oh, look, she was wearing a dress. She deserved it. You don't blame the victim. You have to step back and look at the facts of what happened. Look, you know, Mexico, for instance, is one of the wealthiest resource countries on the entire planet. If you've ever been there, it's a paradise. It's a tropical paradise with the birds and the trees and the temples and the pyramids. And do you think that people would just want to get up and leave a paradise for nothing?
Well,
think about it.
You know what? In my opinion, the whole immigrant thing was just to prolong the economic crisis with a new section of suckers for the Federal Reserve Ponzi scheme. And my solution to the immigration problem is make Mexico the 51st state. Jan, I appreciate you being in there. We've only got a couple of seconds left. I appreciate Aaron. Thank you very much for being here. Jesse, Nick, and Jan, thank you very much.
Oh,
it's really been
you.
Educational, and we do appreciate it. Eastern North Carolina, thanks you, my friend. Okay. Next week, we are going to hopefully have Dr. Dale Livingston on, who is going to bring in some revelations that have just happened on how we can take our country back legally, at least tie up the courts. Okay. You're listening to The Rage. You have listened to The Rage. We'll be back. Same time, same place. Are we just totally messed up here? Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Same time, same station next week. Thank you.